that don't make all the funds for it. The meeting has, this hearing will come to order, start to call a roll.
Anderson.
Excuse me. Brown here.
Aye.
Aye.
Here.
Would you two finish your state? Here. Here. Yep. Here, and Sheldon too is excused, and Mr. is here. Before we begin, I'd just like to tell you about a little problem that we're having relative to the beach bill. Apparently, we have all the coordinates, but once the bill is printed, then we want to run all the coordinates through the computer again to make sure that they all check out right, and that they will then be put in the Senate bill if they're, or when it's on the Senate side, assuming it gets there. May I have the committee's permission to have the bill engrossed, we've already asked, which I already have your permission for, but to not print the amendment. You know, normally you would print the amendments as well as engrossing it, and I figure it's sort of folly to print the amendments when we know that these will be changed. So in other words, all there will be then will be an engrossed bill.
But will the first bill have what we believe to be the new court?
Yes.
Okay.
But
I didn't want to have to go to follow the court.
No. So that all we would do then is not have the amendments printed. Let's take a roll on that. All in favor of that, the names called, those opposed, not a third call roll.
Brown. What?
Aye.
Cole.
Aye.
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 Ken.
Aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we've got that out of the way. I've got a few more coming up too. We won't pin you down.
I didn't want to say though that I thought they figured Strauss would take it very happy with me.
Thank you.
Now we're starting to worry.
We may have done something we didn't want to do. You're happy. I'm concerned.
We may have blown the whole thing. We'll reread that.
Agree that attorneys are the same brush.
intended to ask you that question, John. Why don't you tell the group what it's about? Well, my opinion is that lawyers as well as the doctors are now caught with a statute that's never going to run, because in the opinion it said that the act could not accrue until the person knew they had a cause of action, which means it can accrue only after the patient, in this case, it was a medical problem, discovers that had the problem. In this case, she had plaintiff had been given some penicillin shots 15 years before she brought the action. And then some doctor that she went to told her that her trouble had been caused by these penicillin shots. The court didn't decide the case, but they sent it back for hearing, saying that the statute had not written on it. So that alarmed us, and alarms me as a lawyer, too. And I thought that we might do something with 1797 now. Exactly what can be done, I don't know, but I'm bearing gifts, willing to forget the Section 1 and 2 of the bill, the res ipsa loquitur feature of the bill, if we can doctor it up some way and get to the statute of limitations applied to all professions. Now, I don't think there are two sections that concern me. One is 12010 and 12110. And I'm afraid under our legislative rules and constitutional provisions, we would not be able to tack 12.010 into this bill. That's not its original title. I don't know. I just have a question about it. But this bill could be amended, I think, to do what we want it to do. I think we'd like to have done. And that would be on page 2, line 33, after years, which you mentioned in 2 years, and insert after the date of the occurrence of the act or omission on which the action is based. And we would have to delete, of course, line 17, 21 on page 3, and delete lines 5 through 28 on page 2. Now, I did, while I was here waiting for the committee, I heard that one of your members, I think Mr. Representative Young, has an amendment he has suggested that would accomplish this. Maybe simpler, better, I don't know. I didn't really concern it, and after reading the opinion, I...
Yeah, well, here's what you asked. I'm not sure
to fool around with that last part on phase three, because I don't think we've got a real determination of what professional means, actually. So professional, what does it mean?
I would first move that we take 1665 off the table.
All right, Mr. Carson has moved that we take House Bill 1655 off the table. All those in favor of that, the names of all those opposed, no.
Aye.
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 Now you're right.
Thirteen.
Aye.
Ten.
He's gone.
Aye.
Seven.
Aye. House Bill 1665 is off the table, Mr. Carson.
Aye. 1655 is a bill that has financial testimony. What they're trying to get at is this area that it's akin to the motion to suppress evidence. The district attorney is trying to, and all of a sudden the fellow comes up with an alibi. And I suppose also the full sense of mental incapacity or whatever. What they're trying to get away from, the example they gave was the guy comes in, he says, I was in Seattle or something like that. The DA has no opportunity to check it out. And if it's true, then of course the man ought to be able to be acquitted. If it's not true, then the district attorney, law enforcement officers, will lack an opportunity to investigate on the trial. So this is patterned after the I suppose both on the suppressive evidence and also on the insanity provisions, which require the defendant in a criminal action, if he's going to rely on alibi evidence, he has to, 5 days before the trial, file and serve upon the DA a written notice of his intention to rely, and stating the times, the places he claims the defendant has been at the time that the act was took place. If he fails to file a service notice, he cannot be permitted to introduce the evidence at trial unless the court for good cause or orders otherwise. The intent there, of course, is that if something comes up that you forget, or the district attorney or the defendant's attorney didn't know of it, or some sort of thing, he goes to jail and on the basis of this basis. Then the second section. Identifies or defines the alibi evidence the defendant's attorney was the last admission of alleged event at a place other than the place where the defendant committed. I suspect in the priority of great bills that will come before the legislature, this is not one. But on the other hand, it did come over the impact recommendations from the subcommittee. I appreciate your indulgence in allowing us to take it off the table and bring it back. I would put to the floor the recommendation that you've had.
Are there any questions, Mr. Carson?
I can't find the repeat.
No. So the mercy has a crowd, but tomorrow.
Well, in regard to that, I know that the panel has to say that, but you also have to give the name and address of the witness. Well, let's preclude
surprise.
We love the witness. I think, a couple of witnesses are going to verify that. And we push them. You're going to have to let them call on. They can't use them. Is that right?
Well, if you.
I think you might be able to agree with four witnesses. And you use two of them. And, defense, and they come back and attack the defense then, and then rebuttal testimony or redirect testimony or whatever it is.
If you're in that
case, and then you'd have a couple to rebut that, you wouldn't be able to use them unless you.
If their testimony is that you weren't there, you were in Seattle at the time, that's right, you saved your alibi for rebuttal, which would be the thing to do, right? If you save your alibi for the rebuttal, then yes, you have. If you're going to rely on rebuttal evidence or alibi evidence, then you just, what it requires is you have to telegraph your punch on alibi.
And then all of
on alibi evidence. Now, I grant you that maybe your key witness is going to talk about other things as well. Alibi is only one, maybe something else. And you really opened it up as far as that one witness is concerned. However, I say in a given situation, if the one is testifying that you weren't there, then he'd be hard-pressed to testify what went on at the time. If he was going to testify that you were in Seattle, then he presumably would have to be in Seattle to you. So I don't think you could probably get a fact situation where this might seriously hurt the case. Where it hurts the case, the whole evil, the thing that the district attorneys are trying to get at, or the bill tries to get at, is the surprise caused by a witness that frequently is used as a red herring, rightly or wrongly. And that's what they're getting at. So yes, you have to telegraph your front just like you do on your motion to suppress evidence.
All right. You have to be pretty fast, so.
Good bill. Law and order. Law and order.
All right, Mr. Carson, if you're so convinced, please carry it. George, can we now go back and have you pick up House Bill 1562, please, on negligent homicide?
Is that in your assumption? You want to do the pass? The original bill we felt was much too broad and replete with many problems in regards to Section 2 of the proposed bill, and amendments which you'll find to back to the bill are limiting the violation to those involving driving under the influence of alcoholic or intoxicating liquor, narcotics, drugs, or reckless driving. And they changed the designation from negligent homicide to homicide by vehicle. And that was founded in
Where do you want more coffee?
No, thanks.
George?
Please.
Thank you.
Please, please.
The only testimony was,
Peter Case.
Captain Williams?
Yes. Oh, Peter Case.
Yeah, that's good, that. I've got some here, Walter.
Our only testimony was Captain Williams of the York State Police. He agreed that the bill as written was unworkable and suggested the amendments.
What do you think of deletion of the minimum fine or penalty, really?
I don't see any wrong with that.
We can make a policy, all of us, to put our hands on a criminal penalty. All right, so that, so how would you believe it could be overturned? All right, well, just to authorize Janet to take out the minimum penalty.
It's all moved anyway, so.
All right, then, Mr. Frostman has moved that we delete the minimum penalty from the proposed amendment to House Bill 1562 dated 4/24/69, and that Jenna be authorized to place the section in proper order. All those in favor will say aye, and if that's all those opposed, may the clerk call the roll.
Brown. Aye. Carson.
Aye.
Gold.
Aye.
Frost.
Aye.
Todd.
Aye.
McPherson.
Aye.
Young.
Aye.
Mitchell.
Aye. Mr. Frost, this way. Mr. Frostman further moves that we send House Bill. Well, I thought that's what we did. So that's pretty good for you. But I propose that we adopt the amendment with that exception. Okay, Mr. Frostman moves that we send House Bill 1562 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. All in favor of that, the name of the call, the no further, no roll.
Brown.
Oh, well, I didn't know you had a
try.
Aye.
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 Young.
Aye.
Aye. Will you carry it, please, Ms. Winter?
You gotta be kidding me.
No, I'm not.
I
can give you lots of
woo-hoo!
New stuff on the highway. Oh, there's some minutes.
Why don't we take up whatever Gordy's working on and join us?
House Bill 1569.
No.
62.
Well, I got the rest of them. This is real good reading. This will help you pass that bill on the floor. Driver's bill.
All right. Then, well, I would like to report on House Bill 1667, please.
Yes, sir. 1667.
No, 1667, was recommended to the table by Subcommittee 1.
Yeah, 1668, which we'll bring up, has what 1667 tried to do in it. So
just a minute, would be better to report on 1666 first?
Oh, I don't think so. Okay. 1668 goes night-night. I don't think anybody has any intention of revolving 1667. We move to the table.
Okay.
Boy, if you guys in the table, you know, kind hearted while I'm on the table. I'm even going to fall on my own shoulder.
You want to tell us what it's about before we came?
Well, not really. It's never been disturbed this room before. Why are you so inquisitive, Moses?
I'm trying to run a fair committee.
We're getting it out of your trunk.
That's from Christmas, 1962.
Okay, Mr. Carson moves and we send House Bill. I'll go with you in a minute, Bob.
No problem, I just
Mr. Carson moves and we send House Bill 16.
57 to the table. All those in favor will say aye. The names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Brown. Aye. Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
Cole.
Aye.
Strauss.
Aye.
Moffitt.
Aye.
McPherson.
Aye.
Young.
Aye.
We're going to
1668. I don't know what we do.
Yeah, okay. Why don't we go to 1668 then? Mr. Carson, Cole, do you want to report on that?
Yes, look at your proposed amendment. Is it the right one? Proposed and gross.
Oh.
You know, for somebody who doesn't like candy, it's kept in a trunk. You're certainly the wrong.
Proposed and gross, the right one on Genesis?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. We've chopped this one apart considerably, as you'll notice, from proposed and gross bill.
Could I interrupt yours and say those of you for Roger Rook's bill of 67? This is what he wanted to do with 67 was the basis of his story.
It involves in particular just two things. It amends existing statute 162.530 as indicated by adding knowingly and willfully resists, delays, or obstructs a peace officer in the lawful discharge of his office. And section 3 of that amendment has to do with falsely reporting a crime to a police officer or district attorney. Now we have this minimum fines in here. Again, if you want to delete them, strictly, they are out, aren't they?
Yeah, they're out.
They are out, right. They're all misdemeanors. We also left in the main bill, section 5, which is now section 2, it has to do with the destroying, altering, concealing, etc., certain books and other instruments with intent to conceal the commission of crime or to hinder administration law, making it also misdemeanor. Section 7 is in, which is now section 3, starting at the bottom of page 2 of the printed bill. It has to do with offering any gratuity or gift to any witness or person called as a witness in any trial to influence him in one way or another. Section 8 is still in, which is now section 4, which has to do with attempting to bribe a witness. No, this has to do with the person who accepts. It's going to be a witness and accepts the gratuity.
That is my stir, I recall.
Are there any questions?
Yeah.
Okay, fire away.
George, by our first section 1 on the new, we've eliminated the matter of them refusing to assist on.
What?
Huh? If the off-letter is, I understand.
Yes, we did, because we felt that, how are you? We used the example of the police officer hops on your running board and says, follow that car.
Yeah.
And you instead to roll up the window.
You get a whole lot, brother, not.
You get a hand in the window.
Well, yeah.
So that's another provision here.
Yeah.
So the problem seems to be he's not going to have time to explain to you what he wants or why he is asking you to do this, or so that you can willfully refuse, actually. You just plain don't help him. You could be charged with refusing to assist him when he's requested. And yet you have no choice in the matter. And we question whether there's any legal obligation to assist the police officer, merely because he asked.
Let's see here, coming down the road. Let me compound it. Read number two, which is existing law, first. So any person who is required by any peace officer to assist him in the execution of his office, in the preservation of the peace, the arrest of any person for a breach of peace, or the service of any process, and neglect to refuse or enter, boom. Does that not cover what we ran into? Simply this. Any person who knowingly and willfully resists, delays, or obstructs a peace officer, the lawful, you get into when requested to do so. Well, you can't put those two things together. So we were going to spread them apart, make three sections, and then we looked at section two, and we're already there.
Well, what I was thinking, I think you're right. What I was thinking, Bob said he's driving down the highway, and here's a police officer, and he's been beaten over the head by some irate motorist. And I think you've got an obligation to stop and assist the police officer, and if you willfully fail to do that, I think you should be safe.
Well, yeah, part of the plain clothes. Police officer, in the plain clothes, and he's beat over the head with a tire iron. You have a, are you guilty of a crime if you don't come to his rescue?
Well,
you
got
off of your head and replace the,
you got to know he's a peace officer, I think.
Well,
okay, he's been willfully.
I don't know. The way we read now, any person who, now we're adding knowingly and willfully. The present law says any person who willfully refuses to assist an officer. Discharge of his duty. So that's the present law. So it's worth it to come up like a ball game. You got a plain clothes by the gate. And you get in a scuffle with a college kid. And a college kid, the cop sticks somebody, made a wrong shoes on it. He sticks some guy who will suffer any wrong. And so the guy says, here, help me with this guy. Thinking words to one of the cartoons in the newspaper, you've got a whole series on failure, you know, not coming to the assistance of the...
Do you think there's a section two to cover that?
Where I got the language for it. No, but this came right out of Flash Gordon. I didn't believe it.
How about section two? Will I cover that?
Well,
any person who's required any peace officer to assist him in any way.
Yeah, we'll cover the request
The officer said I want help.
Directive to assist me, rather than a request, actually.
I just didn't want to do any violate what we've got now. I think you should come to the aid if requested. But that's what subsection 2 did, apparently. Is that right?
Well, I admit that statute may be somewhat redundant if they both mean the same thing. But a person who willfully refuses to assist the police officer, and any person who is required by a police officer to assist him, says to me, that's about the same. Maybe a little stronger now. It's not just willfully refusing, it's willfully refusing after I've been requested to come to assist him. So I think that's
okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you...
Or who refuses or neglects to render such a...
That's already done.
Law. Yes, it's the Companion Bill of 1880, of course.
All right, well, Carl,
okay. Yeah. 1712 was a bill by two eminent jurists, sponsored by two eminent jurists who have not eminent, I might add, eminent. We'd like to be, I move it off the table.
All right, all those in favor then of taking House Bill 1712 off the table so that we can discuss same, and if we pass it, we'll add the name of all those closing room for the roll.
Aye.
Paul.
Aye.
Rob.
No.
Oz.
Aye.
Pearson.
Aye.
Young.
Aye.
Westbrook.
Aye.
Did you get Mark's Mr. Chairman, we can
release for the dog.
Probably don't want to get out of here.
That's Washington County Circuit Judge.
Okay. We have the amendments here that have been suggested by the sponsor of the bill.
Where?
I have. Nobody else has?
I have.
Bob, why don't you tell about the bill?
Yeah.
He also retired from circuit judges for Worthing County, Monroe County,
If that was passed out of Ways and Means because of a defect this morning, it's been called back to be reconsidered in work session.
Did all come out?
Including. Yes, they both have the same defect.
Either they compromise their principles or
shut or leave down. Go ahead, Bob. The bill was originally proposed left it discretionary concerning the taking of jury pleadings to the jury room. At the time the bill was introduced, as you recall, and the last time I testified on it, it was introduced with succession. Suggestion of Judge Sanders and Judge Woodrich, of Douglas County. And since that time, I've received a number of letters from members of the Supreme Court and circuit judges around the state, most of which I tried to send down to the committee. I think we all have a pack here with the letters. But apparently the bill has been tabled already. I still am not absolutely certain that this will cure the problem that the judges hope it would cure, but I certainly think that it's worth a try if we can cut down some of the delays in the pleading stage. And I say this not only from the standpoint of speeding up litigation for the benefit of our of clients, which I think occasionally we have to consider the welfare of our clients, but in addition, just from the standpoint of the lawyers involved and the amount of time that is spent in preparing pleadings and preparing memorandum to go along with the questions of striking out evidentiary material and so on, that this would be well worth the trial. I think many of the judges have expressed their opinion, and I think that it certainly is well worth trying this time, and I would like to make one more effort to see this be enacted into law, hopefully to forestall the day when we are going to have everything decided by a bunch of commissioners somewhere, just because our legal procedure is so cumbersome and expensive that the people are going to rise up and rebel. I'd be glad to answer any questions, but my feeling has been somewhat strengthened by a number of lawyers that I've talked to in connection with it. I received letters from numerous lawyers who also suggested I didn't take the time to send those on to members of the committee because I didn't think that a letter from another lawyer was going to particularly influence any of your thinking. But I do think this is one that could be good. I think the amendments which make it mandatory good because then you don't get into the concern of whether or not the judge at the end of the trial is going to say, well, the pleadings will go if it's going to be discretionary, then you've got to go through all the motions. And so just as though you're going to have to assume that he's going to let them go to the jury. So this would make it mandatory that they do not. Carl?
Is there any objection to the amendment that would say, however, at the request of the plaintiff's attorney, the court shall send in a small slip of paper to the amount of the clerk?
Well, as a member of the bar that's specializing in the plaintiff's work right now, I don't think I'd object to that.
Are there any other questions about?
Yeah. So I'm with leaving it on a more discretionary basis with the judge, rather than making it mandatory they not go in if it's just an experimental period.
Well, because I don't think it would be a fair test, in that, as was pointed out by a couple of the judges that wrote to me about it, the problem is that if counsel has to rely upon what the judge is going to do at the end of the case, and all you're going to have to assume that he is going to let them go to the jury, and then you have to go through the various motions to strike and so on, because you have no previous commitment from them as to what is going to happen. And so it really wouldn't probably accomplish the purpose for which it was intended.
Some comments I've heard are that in some civil cases, the legal period becomes so complicated. Maybe the jury shouldn't even be concerned about this, but becomes so complicated that the pleading sometimes helps to frame the issue for them, at least the factual issues, by having them before them. And in some of the cases, like Carl's involved, where he's got the pleading negligence, and then somebody comes back to the inventory negligence, and then he comes back to revise the last clear chance. And, by the time they get through that, with no other explanation than an oral statement from the judge, that I need to frame all that stuff. I wonder if the jury is going to have some difficulty trying to understand it all.
Well, of course, the situation, the law does presently provide for, upon request, to be the party written instruction. And in Jackson County, we've started following the procedure of that for those in practically every complicated case, and find that it has been of a great deal of assistance. Some of the judges who have written to me have commented that in trying to ascertain whether or not this would be harmful to the jury, have talked to jury members following the end of the jury term, and they don't think that this would be particularly harmful, because sometimes they get more confused by the pleadings than they do helped by them now. It's sort of rushed through lead as to who gets helped. I tried a rather complicated case involving products liability case against Caterpillar Tractor Company, and also against a logging operator where a mechanic third coming from a repair operation came onto the logging operation and made repairs on a cat and was killed by reason of the cat backing over. By the time we got the pleadings drawn on that thing, I think it would have been a tragedy if they went to the jury, but it would have been a tragedy if they really gotten into the pleadings. And by the reason of the instruction being in writing, they concentrated on those, and I still lost the case.
What would you think about including in the bill another paragraph that would make it, we follow the working system, have it mandatory, that written ours to get to the jury? I don't know, I tried to sell two cases in Washington last year, and it's one of the most enjoyable experiences in my life. You go to the chambers, you go to the advertisement, before the jury instructions, you go to the chambers, and you put your instructions, and you've got his, and you put it to the wall, and you pick out the stuff, and he tells you, I'm going to this, and get that, and get it, and a copy of the each council, court questions, Seth made the jury, and the court has a set. They're all identical, but the same order as the one you give. And then you go off, give the closing argument, and you can stand up to the jury, and in his honor, they're going to instruct you that the negligent driving the vehicle is this. And you can say, this is it. You can quote the instructions. And in this case, we know that. Your facts right into the instruction. It's really a gee, you really feel like you got something. You don't have counsel jumping on.
Yeah, I'm glad you called the jury.
What you really stuff to make on?
All that is, that would permit arguing a lot of the jury just to give them instructions to the jury.
Well, they let you argue. They let you recite to the jury what the instructions are going to be because they've already been determined. The court has determined what the instructions are. They see that they've been
Well, I'm not opposed to it. The experience that I've had trying cases under this system where the judges really don't get mad if you request them. You've got the right right now. Some jurisdictions, I understand, the court gets a little upset. But I wouldn't oppose that amendment at all because I think the system, having tried cases under it, I think it is a great deal that the jury understands a great deal more what the law is, particularly if you have a judge who happens to very adequately instruct the jury insofar as the record is concerned, but sets up there and mumbles so that no one understands it. And I think it's a good thing. You might get some resistance from some of the judges, but as far as I'm concerned, it would be a improvement in the law. I would not oppose it.
Are there any other questions about
Kent? Well, no, the same opposition I put before. I think the advantage of saying raise the jury and it does frame the issues for them, particularly in the negligence case, we have 4 or 5 allegations. And they can look at those, put out and prevent it parking that vehicle in any other portion of the highway. Rather than trying to sit there and the judges mumble instructions and the lawyers try to hold arguments and the testimony that doesn't take these things in order, they go back there and do that. What was that? The time that he didn't say on that? We're leaving the jury just nothing.
Well,
you know what they're going
to do? I would see some problems in what you say in some areas. I think this is universally true in most courts, but I certainly think it would be cleared by the suggestion of Carl, because the issues are summarized directly in the instructions. You don't have the problem of striking something. How do you paste over it so that they don't pick it up to find out what they shouldn't be looking at and so on.
Are there any other questions of Bob? No, thank you very much, Bob.
Who is that?
Oh, Harold had a question. I was going to ask how to move the
question. Okay, I'll move the amendment to Bob.
All right. Mr. Hart has moved we adopt the proposed amendment to House Bill 1712, dated April 8, 1959. Mr. Jerson?
Are we going to then move on this instruction thing? Is that what we're doing?
I'll make a motion.
Okay. I've read before we get to that part.
What?
Second statute.
Mm-hmm. So, you then will vote for adopting this amendment now.
Yeah.
All right, all those in favor then will say aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Brown, aye.
Cole,
aye.
Cross,
no.
Cross,
aye.
McPherson.
No.
Brown,
aye.
Chairman Wilson.
Aye. All right, Carl, then do you have...
Yeah, let us see what the committee feels, how they feel about it, about the requiring the instructions, portrait instructions to be produced, right, and sent in the jury over the year.
I just don't believe that the reason
for how I could. My personal opinion is that I agree with you. I just don't know then if we're changing the content of the bill so much we have to have another hearing on it or something.
the judges can defend and object here. That's my only problem.
I'm sorry, that's
what?
Well, we all were on the same thing, you know.
I didn't hear Betty's comment.
Okay, I mean, so for the
All right, what do you want to do about Harold's proposed amendment?
Well, you ready to move it? Is there enough to hang along with it? Do you have
enough now? You don't
have enough for what? Vote, to hang that on the jury for
to hang it up the bill.
What would we do? Just amend the one that makes it permissive to make it mandatory?
Just permissive.
Presently, you can, at the request of either party, it's mandatory to do for the judge to submit the instructions. You can just take out at the request of either party. Striking everything before the word the on line four and capitalizing the T in the word the. And it would read, the charge of the court as far as it relates to the law and the facts of the case shall be reduced to writing and then given to the jury by the court as written without any oral explanation or addition. The charge when so reduced to writing and given to the jury shall be filed with the clerk. The jury shall take such written instructions with it while delivering for the verdict and return them to the press immediately upon the conclusion of the deliberations.
Do we want it without any oral explanation? Well, suppose you want to give them orally, the whole party wants them given orally.
Well, it's been interpreted that they have to be read to the jury, but there cannot be an oral expansion.
Well,
by way of explanation.
Harold, why don't you and Jenna work this out and then we'll report on this. Okay. Right now, then, all you're doing is agreeing in principle to Harold's suggested amendment. If this passes,
then Jenna and Carl will be instructed to draw up the appropriate language so that House Bill 1712 could be passed out. All those in favor of that, the names of all those opposed, no, sir, call the roll.
Brown.
Good evening.
Carson.
Cartwright.
Cole.
Aye.
Ralph.
No.
Hawes.
Aye.
McPherson.
Aye.
Yeah.
No.
Young.
Aye.
General.
Aye. Okay, well then, we'll just go ahead on that basis then. Could I close on the committee just a little bit further on another bill that I understand that you have tabled? House Bill 1707. I want to make it clear that this is not, my request is not due to any recent Supreme Court decision.
We acted on it.
Oh, did it? 1707?
Yeah, we have a subcommittee report. Go ahead, we'll give you the committee has acted on it and they tabled it, I think.
Yes.
Well, we're going to ask to have it taken off the table and amended in the past. So you can sit around and watch the fireworks.
Well,
why don't I move it off the table, Mr. Chairman? I'll do that.
Yeah, it's on the table.
It was one, I suppose. If I recall correctly, wasn't it one of the ones that was fell under a blue phone day before the committee and they got wiped out? Without anything said, I'd like an opportunity to have something to say.
All right, Mr. Carson, I move that we take House Bill 1707 relating to criminal appeals off the table. All those in favor of that, as the name is called, those opposed to the first call roll.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye.
You didn't watch Channel 6 last night. What have you got? Aye. Did you vote, Gordon? Okay. House Bill 1707 is off the table.
The opposite bill, you'll find the proposed amendment. It's weird, substituting number one is our first thought. I'm not really aware of it, but it's to, in effect, wipe out five. Eliminates that. Four, we've changed, and now read four, in order suppressing evidence before or during trial. Suppressing evidence before or during trial. That's the one thing that's added over what they presently can do.
Geez, how long are we going to prolong criminal trials by that routine?
Would you have Sid to be recognized before he
did?
Dave.
We really would want to have a criminal trial after you come in and would have a district attorney.
Bob, did you want to add some information?
Well,
simply this, Mr. Chairman. When this, a similar type bill, although much expanded, was before this committee last session, I opposed it. I have, to a certain extent, changed my thinking in this regard. I've had instances in which I found that judges, there are some, I'm sure, that get somewhat skittish about their personal records, and in criminal cases maybe consider the fact that lack of appeal with rights and making rulings. And yet, I found a situation, I tried a negligent homicide case in which I filed a 150-page brief on the law of negligent homicide, which in my judgment established conclusively that I was entitled to a directed verdict of acquittal, which I didn't get, on the basis that if the court directed a verdict of acquittal,
that the state, the issue, the state wouldn't have the right to appeal. So if it went to the jury and the defendant was convicted, the district attorney was advised, the court would then set it aside, and that therefore you would have the right to appeal, which I thought became sort of warped the procedure. I think maybe in some of these instances it might it'd be a good thing. I think striking out five certainly knocks out a lot of the potential appeals, I would think. And I think that we should expand it.
Any questions of Bob? Okay, very much, Bob.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Carson then has moved the amendment.
We'll wiggle baby votes on it.
What do you think? It says
Bill Barr.
No,
they're back.
Mr. Carson has moved the amendment, proposed amendment to Senate Bill 1707 dated 4879. All those in favor of the act, the names are called. Those opposed, no. Clerk, call the roll.
Brown.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Cole.
Aye.
Frost.
No.
Just any delay.
You got it. Do you have any further comments?
Article that he gave you from the business lawyer,
on page 111 of that article, there begins the new proposed section of the Model Business Corporation Act. And it says, demonstrating of officers, directors, employees, agents, and insurance. And what it does is it expands the indemnification provision, saying that any person who is the main party to an action or two to, by reason of the fact that he is a director and he's been serving as a request for corporation, can be identified against expenses, judgments, fines, presuming that he acted good faith in a manner which he was not opposed to best interest of corporation. And the next section, which is expansion, says the corporation can indemnify him against derivative suits which may be brought against him in the name of the corporation or in the name of the derivative. Stockholder in a derivative suit. The next section is merely the extent to which he may be indemnified. It also says that expenses may be advanced to the director or officer while he's under the threat of the suit or pending the defense and so forth. If it's decided against him in a criminal case, he's got to repay the amounts to the corporation. Other indemnification says that the corporation itself may carry liability insurance on individuals who are acting as directors, officers, employees of the corporation. That is the Model Business Corporation indemnity section that he wants to incorporate into the Oregon law. Healy agrees that it's all right to do it, and that's what he wants.
And do you agree?
Yes.
Well, just took up from the back of my brain. I understand now the federal law, the Office of the Labor Division cannot utilize union funds. I think the union cannot be authorized to utilize union funds to provide a defense for him or her. Why would that come to your mind? Well, the federal law, I know, you know, that's a lot.
So was it one time? Beck had a big lawsuit over that particular issue.
Well, yeah,
Beck
had one more recently.
Is there one more recently where they did utilize union
funds? And they sued to get it back.
Where's that in this? Because he must repay it in the criminal case.
Yeah. That is on... look on page 112. Expenses incurred in defense of criminal civil action may be paid by the corporation in advance, final disposition, and so forth. Then it says down there, that's the requirement. See, it says they may be advanced upon receipt of an undertaking to by the director, officer, employee, or agent to repay less amounts, unless it shall ultimately be determined that he is entitled to be indemnified. So if they advance, he must put up an undertaking to repay the corporation at the decision adverse.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, any other questions, Mr. Gordon? What? Yes, go ahead.
To understand exactly what they're doing.
having been a director or officer. So he could be indemnified if he was agreed to suit under the present law. But the present law divides it into two sections. It says, one, third-party suit against him. Second, derivative suit against him, which are in them. Second, other funds shall be advanced. And under the bond case, in repayment for expenses. And one thing that's not now in there about corporate county rights to purchase liability insurance. That's not one of the powers enumerated in the present law.
The present law allows the public funds to defend against the derivative action and against the criminal action.
How would that use that as a read section 15?
along baptism prayers and purpose.
Exactly, Dave's the National Affairs Committee, isn't it?
Yes.
Who will protect the house if one
is coming down?
Which one? All those in favor of say aye, the names are called, those opposed, no, clerk, call the roll.
What is it? It's really what we're doing.
Yes. The motorcycle helmets and substitutes the chiropractic bill. So that's what's happening there, and it's my understanding that there have been amendments proposed, and you are free to come and see me after the meeting today if you want to see what they say.
Yeah.
Anyway, this just sort of proposed, and perhaps you ought to look at it.
That would be particularly interesting because we probably will get it out of step one, motor section six, you leave it there.
With a favorable action. No, I think Betty, I just was saying this for Betty's benefit, that they were prepared by doctors rather than with Jim Snell, so, but she perhaps ought to look at them. George, would you report on House Bill 1637? But I tried to refrain from saying
that. Sure, bad. Oh. They looked in there.
What number?
I just thought we hadn't heard this yet.
Were they recommended? I've got to get them out of here by 2 minutes.
What bill did you want?
I want you to report, George, on House Bill 1637.
1637. What is that?
It should be the regular part of the book.
No, it's from the
table. Oh. Oh, right. It's on the table. And people are going to take it off if they aren't going to go. Because the Dean's at the caucus, we're going to adjourn.